Welcome into another episode of a Colorado Craft Podcast by Mile High Bourbon and Rye. My name is Zach, I am the host, and today I am very excited to be here at 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company in Gypsum, Colorado, joined by Brian and Ryan.
You got it? What's up, Zach?
Yeah, how's it going?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Great, buddy. Yeah. Thanks for making the trip up here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
nice. We've been planning on it for a little bit, so it's awesome to see and have you here at the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
No, definitely going to be a really fun episode. Looking forward to this a lot. Drive's beautiful, awesome area to be placed in. Couple of pictures. I mean, to walk out the front door and get that view that you guys have got at the just the mountain right there is.
Yeah, the front door's good, and then on the back side of things, when the sun's setting and the Alpenvogel goes on the New York mountain ranges back here, it's pretty epic.
That's awesome.
We got the whiskey barrels there with the mountain range going on. It's a pretty special place to call home, man, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, well, tell me a little bit about, I mean, your glasses say established 2014. 10th Mountain, obviously, going to be the... for the 10th Mountain Division,
yep.
That trained up in Vail.
Yep.
I know a bit of the history on that one.
Great.
Pretty cool, but let's talk some about that. How'd you guys get started, and how'd you end up being 10th Mountain?
10-year anniversary is right around the corner.
I know.
And it still feels like a startup from yesterday. We're on day number two, right?
I think so.
Feels like it.
I can't remember anymore.
I think it's our second or third day, maybe. We'll see.
Just getting started off.
I was watching what the craft distillery movement was doing 12, 13 years ago. Obviously here in the States, Stranahan's was leading the way.
Yep.
And then saw some other distilleries popping up around the country, and I'm like, well, shit, this is the thing. And I owned a restaurant at the time and had bought and sold a couple other businesses and restaurants, and I homebrew quite a bit back in the day just for fun, just nothing on a commercial level, just for home enjoyment and giving it to friends and family.
Awesome.
And distillation is the next step after making beer.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, someone in this valley is going to make whiskey sooner or later. I'm like, well, screw it. Might as well be me.
Might as well be me, yeah.
So,
absolutely.
You know, I have a lot of respect and maybe a bit of envy to the moonshiners out there that are doing it under the table.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to deal with everything that happens above the table with paperwork and the TTB and all. Obviously, we're above the table, literally,
as well.
Right, yeah. But so I looked into it, went out to Moonshine University. I was in the first class that Moonshine U ever did out in Louisville.
Okay.
And got hands-on distillation knowledge there. They have a 250-gallon still, very similar to our 500-gallon still that we use.
Awesome.
And learned the science, the chemistry, the legal, the operating aspects of running a distillery at Moonshine University. Came back, wrote a business plan, put one foot in front of the other, and just trying to put our next foot in front of us tomorrow, right?
So, oh, absolutely, yeah.
And then that's what it ended up being. Just wrote a solid business plan and begged, borrowed, and stole as much money as I could put together.
Perfect.
And leveraged my house, sold another condo to raise some money for it, and here we are 10 years later. Trying to do the best we can with it all, so.
Still in production, so I mean.
Yeah, totally, exactly, yeah. Right? Yeah, we're still here.
That's the key.
We
plenty of barrels sitting here aging behind us right
plenty
now.
Plenty of barrels here, so I don't know how many barrels we lied down yesterday, but we lie down about a barrel a day.
Sweet.
And on Friday mornings, the guys, our two distillers will barrel, and they probably lied down 6 or 7 barrels yesterday. I didn't get the exact count, but something like that, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're certainly heading the right direction and growing. Brian here is our head of distribution, and so we're getting into a number of new states this year and trying to grow the brand in different markets, which is challenging and a little bit of fun and stress and all the above, but yeah, here we go. So and you said it, you named it, we're named in honor of the 10th Mountain Army Division.
Yep.
So and we can get into that if you want, just depending on what direction you want to go here. So.
Yeah, we'll touch base on some of that. Yeah. Expanding into other states and stuff, like what... Yep. What kind of challenges are you hitting with that right now?
Yeah, what kind of challenges do you have, Brad?
Everything, honestly. So each state has a different distributor that you can use, or there's controlled states. You have control 1, control 2, and control 3 states, or A, B, and C, just depending on who you're talking to and what's going on. Controlled 1 states are controlled by the states directly. They're really hard to get into. You have to apply through the state, go through a board, get that board to approve it. If they don't like the product, they can give you a reason or they won't give you a reason. It depends on the state. And they could also say, this is your only time to apply ever and you can never apply again. So you have to be very cautious, but at the same time, things can change in the future just depending on where you're going with that controlled one state
yeah.
and there's ways and movements around it. So we're very political on our stances and very polite and courteous, and we just try to be the nicest people possible when we're talking to these individuals. Controlled B states are a little bit different, where alcohol is bought through the liquor stores to the restaurants and bars out there. That still, you have to have a applied process through that. That's Nebraska is one of those states.
Well, and a lot of the times, the states were like, "Hey, we love you.
Yeah,
we love your product. We love your brand. We're not bringing on any more XYZ right now. We're not bringing on any more bourbon right now. We're not bringing on any more whiskeys from Colorado or distilleries from Colorado or whatever. Maybe they have or have not. They're looking for." So oftentimes we get, "Man, we love what you guys are doing, but we don't have room for you right now."
Yeah.
Like, damn it. All right.
Well, so. I know too. Like, Colorado whiskey still is. It's obviously exploded a lot, right? Like you said, it was kind of just Stranahan's. There was a couple of little guys. Now there's, I think, last number I saw put it at 113 active distilleries.
Something like that, right?
Roughly.
So, I mean, obviously growing, but the challenge is you bring a bourbon into basically anywhere outside of Colorado, and the general view is, you know, is it from Kentucky? Then, no, I don't know that we're really interested in bringing it in at the moment, because...
Yeah, that was the view for a long time. I think that is starting to change.
I agree.
Yeah, right? And I think Colorado, being a little bit biased, but Colorado whiskeys are certainly having an influence there. Some good stuff coming out of a number of states out there, and so I think that's been the way it has been for a long time, and I think that's slowly starting to change a little bit, so...
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the states that aren't, like... totally controlled by the state for the liquor, right? You more have to sell the consumer of the product on your product more than the state.
Well, to an extent, right? So we actually have to sell it to a distributor first and say, "Hey, do you like our product? This is what our product is.
Yeah.
This is how we're selling so far. We're expanding into these different markets, and we would love to expand into yours to be in the most positive direction as possible."
Yep.
You make money and we make money at the same time. It's a loving relationship that we grow with all of our distributors, and we're happy about it.
We have to make 3 sales to move a bottle or a cocktail, which is really interesting and unique to our industry. I think it's a sale to what Brian was just saying, to distributors, and then a sale to a bar, restaurant, liquor store, country club, VFW, whatever, on or off premise if you want to use industry lingo, and then a sale to the consumer. And so it has to go through all 3 of those sales. Sometimes you even have to sell a state on it. We're in a number of the military PXs and Class 6s.
Okay.
You have to sell them on it. So just to get the product to go from our distillery here to the consumer's mouth and enjoying it, there's 3, maybe 4 or 5 different sales steps that have to happen during that process. So.
The good news is when you've got a product that you know is good, other people confirm that it's good, you believe in it, and you're able to talk about it like, really positively, like you were saying. You can have that, you can build that relationship, you can be really, you can have all the politeness, but at the end of the day, it's what's out of there that's really going to end up selling your product. And,
100%, yeah.
Yeah. And you guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, so. We have recently brought on a new sales rep down in Texas, and he has a sales background, and he just told Brian, he's like, "Dude, every person I get this in front of, they love it." So it's just to grow this thing, it's just a matter of awareness.
Yep.
He's like, "How do we get that awareness out there?" And so that's what we're trying to tackle now.
And that, I think, is the biggest challenge that a lot of Colorado, like you said, I think Colorado in general, you guys, everybody else, and a lot of the small ones that are still kind of young and just getting their feet wet, so to speak, they're still producing really good stuff. Building that awareness is the key to doing that, so... let's do talk a little bit about the 10th Mountain name influence and how you guys got that. Because
I thought you were going to say we should talk about the cocktail we have.
Well, we can do that. Hey,
right, Brian, so, what'd you make us?
Yeah. So this is a rye old fashioned that we use with our barrel-aged maple syrup. We actually infuse it with some cinnamon as well. And when we do that, it gives it a little bit different taste with it. And we use our orange bitters that we make in-house and old-fashioned bitters we make in-house as well. So everything is made by us.
We don't make the syrup.
The
trees make the syrup.
Trees make the syrup,
but we send our barrels out to a maple syrup farm. And cheers, don't be rude.
Oh,
cheers, buddy.
I'm sorry, I was thirsty.
We collaborate with the maple syrup farm out in Ohio, of all places.
Interesting.
And they do, and it's an amazing, and the syrup's incredible. We sell the hell out of our 2 taste rooms, and it makes a good cocktail.
Thank you, yeah.
And so, But yes, to Brian's point, we basically make everything else that's in the cocktail. So
that's awesome.
And we have an influence. So we send our barrels out to this maple syrup farm. They age the syrup in our barrels and then bottle the syrup, send it back to us, send the barrels back to us. Maybe we'll age some more whiskey in those barrels. We got some stuff coming out here soon. So,
ooh, yeah, that's exciting. I've seen, like, there's a couple of whiskeys I've tried that have had that, you know, syrup in the barrel, whiskey goes back into the barrel, and the syrup comes out. And I think that influence, they play together so well.
Yeah, they definitely do, right? Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I'm excited to see that happen.
Yeah,
sure.
So are we.
Yeah. No, this is awesome. And you said the rye whiskey is the one that we used in this one, right?
Correct. Yeah. So it's 86 proof with our rye. It's 69% rye. 27% corn, 4% malted barley.
Okay.
Is that mash bill that we're putting into those.
Awesome. And how long are you aging them for?
At least a minimum of 2 years right now. Everything in there is a mixture of 2 year and like a 5 year barrel that we're combining together just to get that flavor and profile.
So awesome.
Yeah.
No, that's perfect.
Yeah.
So I still do want to get to the 10th mountain, but before we do that, it's just on the aging note as well. What have you seen, or what have your distillers seen about trying to age up in this altitude, thinner air, less humidity?
It's a great question, right? And it's something that a lot of people are starting to take note of. And I've heard it a number of times at this point, is that whiskeys in Colorado, not just up here at the altitude we're at, higher than 6,000 feet up here, but I think all around the state, is that whiskeys here are aging about 3 to 1 to whiskeys in other locations. So
faster,
exactly, okay. Right, 3 years to 1 year. So our 1 year tastes like a 3 year, or 2 year tastes like a 6 year, something along those lines. And we get it all the time at the tasting room. People will come in, want to make a snap judgment based on the age statement, and like, hey, how come in, and they want to, you know, show off how much they know, and come in and like, how old are you got? And they're like, well, why don't we give you a taste of ours, and then you tell us how old you think it is.
Okay.
And so we don't even say anything yet. We're like, here, have it. Oh, that tastes like a 5 or 6 year. Like, great, it's a 2 year.
That's awesome.
And so, like, well, this is the best 2 year I've ever had. We're like, yeah, that's why we don't say it right up front, because we know you're going to make a snap judgment. But a lot of people are taking note out there that whiskeys are certainly aging, not just here at our distillery, but other distilleries around the state as well.
Yeah.
About 3 to 1, which is a great benefit to what we have going on here. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I've noticed, too, age statements are kind of falling off of a lot of bottles just in general, because the age doesn't necessarily always translate to what you're trying to get across. I know for a long time, age statement was a huge deal to have on a lot of bottles.
Yeah,
but
right.
Especially as you're saying, is it, you know, as you taste it, it tastes like something that might be aged for 5, 6 years somewhere else. You get it for less time. No, you know.
Yeah, people don't know the difference unless they have it in their mind that it's younger and it's not going to be as good. But, you know, that's just educating the consumer on this. So,
yeah. Which is really, really cool.
Yeah,
so what causes that, do you think? Causes that to kind of age quicker?
We're at up here, there's a diurnal temperature swings each day, right? So tonight it's going to be, and we're recording this in end of May, it'll be 45 degrees here tonight, 40 degrees, something like that. And then during the day, it's going to, now today's not a great example, today it might be 65 here. During the summertime, it can reach 100 degrees here, and then at night get down to 50 degrees. And so that big temperature difference certainly encourages the whiskey to take a breath, moving in and out of the barrel.
Yeah.
Right? So that's part of it. I'm no scientist, chemistry.
Wow.
Weather person.
But you're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah. I know what you're trying to
say. I'm
meteorologist.
I'm none of that stuff. Ends in an ISTI. I'm sure the barometric pressure here has an influence from people that are much smarter than clearly the three of us have looked into. So it does have an overall effect, but I think the big difference, I would say, is probably those temperature fluctuations that we experience here in our area.
That's awesome. So you lose a lot to Angel Share, like, quicker, you think?
Well, that's a unique thing about aging here as well. Our first year, yes, we lose a little bit more, but we're in a unique position where we're losing water and not alcohol.
Yeah.
So we enter the barrel about 120 proof.
Yep.
And while we age, that proof is increasing because the water is evaporating, the Angels, right?
Yep.
So joke's on you, Angels, this time, right? You're not getting our alcohol. So when we go to bottle, if it's after 2 years, it's going to be 126 to 130.
Okay.
And it goes on up from there. We have some high-octane stuff, hazmat stuff, if you will, is what a lot of people refer to it in the industry, anything above 140 proof. And we have a lot of that here, which is really unique. And people are starting to recognize that and take note. And we do barrel picks often, and so a lot of barrel picks are the hazmat stuff or the higher proof stuff at least.
Yeah.
Because it's harder to find. You know, a lot of places, while the spirit is aging, it's going to lose alcohol, and so if they enter at 120, when it's done aging, it's going to be 110.
Yep.
And so certainly a pretty fortunate aspect of having a distillery where we're at. That hell, I never saw it coming, but you know, we'll be the beneficiary of it.
Right, that works great.
And so, when it's time to bottle, like Brian said, our rye is 86 proof, our everyday rye, our bourbon's 92 proof. So we use the reverse osmosis water, which most distilleries do, to proof it down to bottle strength. So we're able, although we're losing a lot of angel share at the beginning, we're able to add our RO water and proof it down, and in essence, kind of balances itself out in the end, which is Great for the checkbook.
Right, yeah. I get it. That's one of those things that helps you stay afloat.
Yes, absolutely. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Let's see, how many barrels do you think you're aging at a time right now?
We've got about 600 or so.
Okay.
Right now. A little over 700 right now.
Yeah, is that what it is?
Yeah, over 700 barrels. I just talked to our head distiller 2 days ago about how many barrels we had sitting down. Because when I go out to these different distributors, I want to give them numbers saying, yeah, we're growing.
Yeah.
So we're a little over, I think he said a little over 700 as of a few days ago.
That's awesome.
So,
and that's the tricky thing about this business. You know, Brian's out there getting more business in more markets, and it's a supply and demand cash flow. It's a product that takes 2 years to make at least. And so how you plan ahead, how you balance it all out. So, I'm like, Brian, put us in a pinch, man. That'd be great.
Yeah,
right. So we'll figure it out when that happens. But, and it sounds, you know, we're in a number of different states out there, but a lot of the states are low volume. A lot of states we just opened up, and so we'd have to, that's when the real work begins, is when we finally get a new opening PO, purchase order with a new distributor, and then they expect us to go in and move it and sell it. And so, so it certainly takes a lot of time to build up and actually start getting some pull through in these markets. So,
yeah, makes sense. But that's awesome.
That's like a business podcast. We can get into intricacies. This is a drinking podcast,
right? Exactly. Yeah, so that's what this one is,
right? This is more fun.
So, yeah, let's talk about some of the 10th Mountain, because you guys did an event in Denver that I was able to attend, and like brought down some really cool old military. Like I think you had snowshoes that they were using, a couple of things on display. It was a wicked cool event.
Is that the one with Dave Little where he talked about the history and then were you at that one? Yeah, great.
Yep.
Awesome, man.
Yeah,
great.
So I did get to attend that one.
Dude, that was one of my favorite ones that we've ever done. And I want to do more with Dave Little with that. It was a 10th Mountain history talk, and then we would pause every 30 minutes or so, and then we'd do a whiskey tasting, one of our spirits, and Dave would go back into the history of 10th, and he's a 10th Mountain historian. He's so knowledgeable on the division, and so I always learn. I've listened to this talk, so I don't know, 20 times at this point, and I'm always learning something
new.
Picking
up something new every time? Totally, yeah, right? It seemed like when I was sitting there listening to him talk, just absolute wealth of knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? It was so cool to sit and just enjoy all that. So, might have to talk to him, maybe try to get him on a podcast
Man,
to talk
he would
more
love
about
it.
The history.
Yeah, he's all about sharing the history of 10th and spreading the knowledge of it, so.
But let's go, give me a kind of short overview for everybody who may not be as familiar with.
And I'll mention something real quick. One of our brand ambassadors who was in 10th Mountain, for how long was Devin in 10th? He was in Army for 9 years, I think. I don't know how long he was in 10th, but anyways, it's not the point.
Good
at least four years. I think he did two deployments at 10th. And he went to the talk that we're speaking of, and he's like, Ryan, I learned more in this hour and a half about my division than I ever learned in my 4 or 5 years in the actual division.
Yeah.
So he's like, dude, this is incredible, man.
Yeah.
So, and the headquarters, 10th headquarters, is starting to change that. When they get new soldiers arriving on posts there at Drum, is they have an educational side of things, so everybody appreciates the history of the 10th Mountain. And so,
which is awesome.
Yeah, exactly right. It's really cool. Headquarters appreciates what we're doing out here at our tasting rooms. So we have a tasting room in Vail Village, another tasting room at our distillery, which is where we're at now. And the headquarters at Fort Drum recognize the fact that people come in and sit down with us and enjoy a glass of whiskey for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it is.
Yep.
And it gives us an opportunity to share the history of the 10th and a unique platform to share that history and to show our support for the military. And so the 10th headquarters is incredibly supportive of what we have going on as well.
That's
which
awesome.
Is really cool and really fun. So, yeah. And then, of course, we're at the PX and the Class 6 back at Drum.
Yep.
PX is basically a Walmart, and the Class 6 is a liquor store, right?
Okay.
For viewers out there that aren't familiar with those terms.
I've heard of them, but I didn't know them.
Not military myself,
yeah, so sure, I don't know most of that stuff. Yeah. But.
So it's been a very symbiotic relationship. There's a couple events out here each year where some of the soldiers from Drum come out and join us for the 10th history. They're the 10th descendants and the 10th foundation, different programs that go on out here, different events. So,
awesome.
And they're getting, Drum is getting a lot of their soldiers out here to check out the history and experience Camp Hale, where the original guys trained in the 1940s. And then they can take their knowledge of what they've learned back to Drum and share it with all their friends and family back there too. So just one aspect of everything.
Nice.
Goes into the actual namesake, right?
Yeah.
You want this one? Go for it, Brian.
10th Mountain Division, are you sure? Because, I mean, it seems like you were on a roll there with everything you had. There was no running out of breath for you.
Yeah, I know, right? I get going, right?
Yeah. So the 10th Mountain, our namesake, originated here in the 1940s. When I say here in Colorado, about 15 miles south of what is now Vail Mountain, Vail Ski Mountain.
Okay.
It's between Vail and Leadville, and it is a gorgeous valley with 13,000 foot peaks all around it, some 14,000 foot peaks nearby. And it's where it was the original Mountain Warfare Specific Army Division for the United States.
Okay.
And during World War II, the guy that was head of National Ski Patrol saw that there was a really good chance that we were going to get into some mountain warfare, and took them a number of times to encourage the government for them to realize that we needed a mountain warfare specific division. Yeah. Finally, it happened. They scouted a couple different locations, landed on Camp Hale here in Colorado.
All right.
And the guys were here for a number of years training, learning how to ski, learning how to rock climb, learning how to snowshoe and survive in the cold weather elements, learn how to survive in the mountains. They never really thought they were going to get into combat in World War II. After they were done here, they got shipped down to Texas, of all places, to practice some deployment maneuvers.
All right.
Or some...
It's pre-deployment maneuvers.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah.
And so they're like, what the hell is a mountain infantry or a mountain division doing in Texas, of all places?
Right.
And then they thought they were going to be shipped off to the Pacific, opposite of where they were thinking about going, wanted to go. And then in the end, they ended up landing in Italy and moving north to the Goth Line and kicking some Germans' asses and winning some very significant battles that were game changers in world history.
Yeah.
And when the war ended, they returned home and wanted to share the mountain lifestyle with their friends and family. They wanted to share the sport of skiing with their friends and family. And in essence, started the modern day ski industry as we know. So over 60 different ski resorts around the country were started by 10th Mountain Vets.
Seriously?
Yeah. So yep, that's
that
pretty cool.
Not something I'd heard before.
And that's Vail crazy. Mountain being one of those.
Makes sense.
So
yeah.
Our backyard here, right? Started by a 10th Mountain Vet. Nike was actually founded by a 10th Mountain Vet. So Phil Knight's business partner was a guy named Bill Bowerman who was in the 10th.
Okay.
Pletzel Climbing Gear was a 10th Mountain Vet. So if you're any climbers out there, some media, ski and skiing magazine were started by 10th Mountain Vets. A bunch of the technology and the equipment and skis and boots and bindings and et cetera. I don't think they can claim making a ski pole, a flask out of a ski pole. I think that development came later.
Well, we don't know because they were all drunk.
They might have. They might have.
Yeah.
That's one thing, and that's a thing we're... appreciate about them. These guys worked their asses off, and they kicked some serious ass. But at the end of the day, they love to sit down and have a drink and enjoy themselves and let off some steam as well. So we were sitting around starting the distillery, and they're like, well, hell, let's name it in honor of the 10th Mountain guys, because without them, one, we wouldn't be living a free life that we do today.
Yep.
Thank you to all the military out there. Two, we wouldn't be skiing an amazing ski mountain, Vail Mountain,
right,
without the 10th and without these guys that started it. And so we're like, well, let's use it as, call our distillery 10th Mountain and use it as a platform to support the military and different military nonprofits and to recognize the fact that we appreciate what they're doing. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's the namesake. Did I leave anything out?
No.
Great, covered it.
Awesome.
Yeah. they were deactivated in the mid-50s, just a little history on the division. And then they were reactivated as a light infantry division in the mid-80s.
Okay.
And that's when they were headquartered at Fort Drum, New York, which is about an hour, 15 minutes north of Syracuse. maybe it's a 3-hour drive depending on what winter day you catch it.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
It's a few miles south of the Canadian border. As I understand, they're stationed there so they can deploy quickly. And yep. They've been the most actively deployed division in the Army in the last 30 years, too. So.
Wow, all yeah. right.
So extremely active. A lot of infantry go through the 10th sometime throughout their career because it is it's one of the largest divisions as well. And so what better way to honor those guys and show some appreciation than naming our distillery after their division and continue to support them with what we have going on.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, like I said, one of my favorite stories because I did get the whole spiel down in Denver.
Yeah.
Which, again, if you have the chance to talk to Ed, I'm sorry, I'm blanking.
David Little?
Yep.
Yeah.
If you have the chance to talk to him, like, absolutely do it because you'll learn so much and so much cool information.
Yeah.
But I like that it sounds like they've really embraced sort of the partnership with you guys as well. Like,
yeah.
they understand what you guys are doing and that you're truly honoring what the division is.
Right. Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
That's a blast.
Yeah, and it's something that we consider every time we make a decision. Like, are we doing it in the right light? Are we doing it to honor the 10th? It's something that we're very conscious of to make sure that everything we do and all the actions that we take are making sure that we represent the 10th in the right way as well. So,
which is fantastic.
Yeah, something the military likes to say is you want to be above reproach. When you do any actions or any talk about anything, you want to make sure you have that knowledge basis to do that. So we all train all of our staffs saying you have to be above reproach in all this. Make sure you know the knowledge first before you talk about it. If you don't know it, just say you don't know and say you'll get back with an answer later on once you have that information.
Man.
And they'll either call Ryan or myself, or if we don't know, we'll call someone else and ask them. And
call David Little.
Yeah,
right, there you go, and get that information. So.
I was doing a tasting at Dallas, at DFW Airport, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And there's a guy that walks by with his kid and stops and looks back. He's like, 10th Mountain Whiskey, huh? And he didn't know, you know, anything like how I was associated with it.
Yep.
And he walks back and goes, oh, I think I'm familiar with that company. He goes, what do you know about the 10th? And I just like went on a diatribe for 10 minutes. And he's like, okay, so you know your stuff. He's like, I'm from Aspen, so I'm very familiar with the distillery over in Gypsum. I'm like,
yep.
Great, my name's Ryan. I started the thing. He's like, oh, got it, okay. So it was a pretty funny moment. Just like he was trying to call us out, call me out and on my history of it. He just thought I was like a hired person to do some tastings in DFW, right? So it was a pretty funny deal. But to Brian's point, we make sure anybody that comes on our team and starts working with us that they're well versed and well educated and knows the importance of the division as well. So because we get a lot of military visiting us, we get a lot of retired and active 10th Mountain soldiers come through.
Yeah.
They want to come and hang out and sit down and swap a story or two and enjoy a glass of whiskey. We also make a couple other spirits, so maybe it's a glass of vodka. Doesn't matter. Whiskey sounds cooler.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, I've had most of what you guys have put out because I worked at a liquor store for about 11 years. So
nice.
I ended up getting to do, you know, I ended up trying a lot of different stuff that way. I got to, and became familiar with a lot of Colorado stuff. And your vodka's great.
Thank you.
I agree. Like, I always say 10th Mountain Whiskey. Probably should say distillery, but whiskey's the first
well,
one.
Well, that's our name. It's 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company. It's not 10th Mountain Vodka and Spirit Company.
Yep.
We hang our hat on our whiskey expressions. Currently, we make 4 different types of whiskeys, and then the vodka, brandy, and a cordial as well.
The cordial is
but,
a blast.
Yeah, thank you,
really
right?
Like
it's
that
it's
one.
Yeah,
so
people love
fun,
it, right? It's the cordial category is about yay big when the whiskey category is quite larger.
Yeah.
So cordials overall don't move as quickly, but once people taste our Alpengo cordial, they love it and are buying a bottle.
It's,
so
yeah, it's really fun. It's
but,
such a cool one.
Yeah, totally right. But so we get a lot of soldiers that come into our tasting room. Hell, that's how Brian and I originally met. Brian sits on the board of a military nonprofit called Base Camp 40.
Okay.
Came in and asked us for some support. We said 100%, and that's originally how Brian and I met. So so it's important to us to make sure that our whole team knows the history and the importance of the 10th Mountain Division because obviously that's our namesake, and we want to make sure we're representing it correctly and proudly.
Awesome.
So.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit more about whiskey and everything. I do have to do some actual business that I've got as well. If you guys are following along, we do have a new sponsor, Centennial Cuts, out of Colorado. Colorado Beef Company, it's family-owned and operated. I've got some talking points that I you know, want to hit and make sure that I'm saying everything right, but really impressed with the company so far. Because, like, I mean, you guys, obviously, Colorado through and through, everything about it is. You're representing the 10th Mountain Division, which started here. growing out, and it's, you know, we're all about growing the state of Colorado, and I like supporting anybody who's doing the same type of thing. So really happy to have Centennial Cuts come on. Centennial Cuts offers some premium beef selections that can be delivered directly to your door or picked up at their retail locations. They've got two actual retail stores, one in Lakewood area and one in Colorado Springs. They offer different packages. You can get 250-pound packages, I think a 70-pound package, something like that. Different cuts, everything like that. It's all Southeast Colorado is their farms. They grow everything out there. It's finished on local-grown corn and distiller's spent grain. Nice. Gives it a great marbling as well, so really great to cook up, throw it on the grill. We're recording this, what, 2 days before Memorial Day? Yeah. Yep. It'll come out right before Father's Day, so might not be able to see this before Memorial Day, but if you're looking for a gift for Dad for Father's Day, you're looking for something like that, it's a great place to go. They've also got dog treats as well, so, you know, take care of your dog, take care of yourself. Get some jerky, get some sausages, get, you know, all beef hot dogs to throw on the grill as well. Absolutely fantastic company. Like I said, ship directly to your door or picked up at their locations, retail locations in Lakewood, Belmar, or Old Colorado City. And they actually have a spot in DIA's B Concourse to pick up jerky. So next time you're flying out, grab some jerky for the plane ride as well.
Probably pairs well with whiskey, I'd imagine.
I imagine it does, yeah. And in fact, I know it does. Yep. And that's one of the big things, too, is like I said, it's whiskey and steak go together because, of course, they do. Right? You throw a good steak on, you have a nice glass of, well, actually, maybe this cocktail with a nice big steak, right. A little bit of salt and pepper, fry that thing up real quick, and that's it. Hungry now, but... more information, visit CentennialCuts.com. We'll have a link in the description of the podcast, whether you're on YouTube, Spotify, wherever you're listening. And when you place your first order online, use promo code MHBR, Mile High Bourbon Rye, MHBR, get 10% off your first order. So CentennialCuts.com, thank you again to them for sponsoring this show and making conversations like this something that I actually get to do on a semi-regular basis.
Love it.
Continue to grow. So once again,
can't wait to get some steaks.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, check them out.
Yeah, totally.
For sure. Absolutely. But sweet. So let's talk some more about, like I said, whiskey and spirit company. Let's just kind of talk about your Alpenglow real quick. I know I want to get into the whiskeys too, but that Alpenglow is such a fun liqueur.
Yeah, it's a flavor that we wanted to come out with a flavor that was influenced by like an Austrian schnapps of some sort. Done skiing, and it's a great operating cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of our impetus in starting it, but we didn't want to have, we wanted to come out with a new flavor that wasn't on the shelf yet, but influenced by Colorado geography. And so hence the sage and hence the peaches. Obviously a lot of sage around the state, and peaches are very well known on the western slope.
Yep, Palisade
peaches. And then we use, exactly right, we use a vanilla to kind of this blending agent between the two. And it's a little sweeter. I was compared to a sweetness of like a Grand Marnier, maybe a Tuaca, something along those lines. But a unique flavor that wasn't out there yet. People love it. It mixes a great cocktail with our rye whiskey. So about 70% rye whiskey, 30% cordial.
Okay.
Is incredible, actually.
I don't know why I've never thought to combine those two.
Yeah.
Rye is one of my favorites for making cocktails because bourbon's a standard. You've got an old-fashioned made with bourbon. It's going to be a nice, sweet drink. But when you add rye into something like that, it just adds that kind of spice, which makes it a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
So,
and sometimes the cordial is a little bit too sweet for people, and if it is, then we just like add a little bit of rye to it, and they're like, okay, now you got me.
Yeah.
So it's a retails for $44.99. You're not going to find a similar flavor in any other bottles. And so it's just a fun spirit that kind of gives us our product line a little bit of depth.
Yeah.
So, but it's, man, I don't know what the key is to make it catch on as like a Grand Marnier or something, but we're working on it. We're trying. Once people taste it, they're buying a bottle. So,
yeah
it's fun.
For sure. That's one that I've got. I actually have a bottle of rye and a bottle of Alpenglow.
You're going to go home and try it, aren't you?
Absolutely going to go mix that up as soon as I get home. So.
70% rye, 30% cordial.
Okay.
Yeah.
70-30 ratio.
Yep.
Should be pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
And then,
And going into summertime here, it goes great with iced teas. So if it's a hot day and you have a little unsweetened tea, you add a little bit of that, add a shot of Alpenglow to it, is great. It makes a great floater on top of a margarita as well.
Oh, man.
Yeah, totally right.
I hope you guys are all writing this down because I'm going to go back and listen and jot
I'll add two more. If you're a coffee drinker and a little splash in the morning, get you going, and or a little hot chocolate for you sweeter ones out there.
Afternoon hot chocolate.
Yeah,
especially. You spend all day on the slope.
Yeah, exactly.
Cold,
right.
Get down in the lodge and, yep. Oh man, that yep. sounds great.
Exactly. So that's what's going on with that spear. It's fun.
Man, that's a blast. Yeah. I've been really impressed with it. I've always just had it straight up when I first tried it, and like it's just something that I've always kind of been like, you know, this sounds like it'd be something I'm just in the mood to have.
Right.
A little different, a little out
yeah,
there.
Exactly. Even. Right. Yeah.
That's a good one for it.
Yeah,
so.
It's fun. Gives us some flexibility with cocktails at the tasting room.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a fun spirit. And when we were designing the label on the bottle. We were looking for just nice pictures. I was working with a close friend that has a graphic design company.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got a buddy that's a photographer, and he's got some pictures of Alpenglow Mountains and stuff. And so he's like, how about this one? I'm like, that's perfect. We put it on the bottle. The first week we were selling this stuff, someone walks in and was like, oh, you got Mount Sniffles on the bottle. I was like, Mount who? He's like, Mount Sniffles. I'm like, he's like, it's a 14er over in Ouray. I'm like, no kidding. So sure enough, I look up Mount Sniffles, and it's the exact mountain there. So it's a 14er here in Colorado, of all things that just happened by happy accident, as Bob Ross would say.
Oh, hey, that's perfect, though.
Yeah.
Can't ask for a better coincidence than
that. Yeah, totally, right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So our distillers don't like it. It's got 7 labels on it. It takes a while to label each bottle.
Yes.
But we're working on that.
Okay,
we'll see.
That's fair.
We're working on that. That's fair.
Yeah.
It's a fair argument.
Well, that's one of those things like, man, this looks really nice, but it's a pain in the butt to make it look
yeah,
that nice.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yes. It tastes really good, too. So it's a fun one. Then we have a brandy, which is made with Pinot Noir grapes from Monterey Valley, California.
Oh, sweet.
Actually, Justin, who owns the vineyard, is going to be here in 2 weeks with his family.
Oh, fantastic.
I'll let you know when that's happening so you can meet him. So I've got a buddy that owns a vineyard. He's a third-generation vineyard owner in Monterey Valley. Has a bunch of acres, grown some great grapes out there for a lot of other different vineyards, and I'm sorry, different wine brands. He had a bunch of leftover Pinot Noir grapes a couple years back, and called me up, and he's like, hey, you guys want 3,000 gallons of Pinot Noir? Yeah. I was like, well, I do. How much is that going to cost?
Yep.
He's like, cost? I'm just going to give it to you, man. Then distill it and age it, and if it's good, sell it, and then cut me in on the back end. We just have a handshake agreement, and all is good, and we've been doing it for 3 years now or something, right?
That's awesome.
Our brandy was recognized as one of the top 3 brandies in the country by USA Today. That's a fun little feather in the cap.
Yeah.
And I never, 10 years ago, like, you're going to make brandy. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? No, I'm not. So as the world turns, here we are. So we did it 1 year, and then the next year he called and said he had 5,000 gallons. Same deal. And so it's good Pinot Noir. It was just a little off-brand for what he had going on. So it's 14% ABV when we get it in.
Yep.
And we take that wine and distill it, right, put it right in the still, distill it off, and then we age it in our used bourbon cask for at least 2 years.
Okay.
And then bottled in a 375 milliliter bottle and retails for $29.99.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah. As people are aware, Wisconsin loves their brandy old fashions. So a lot goes up to Wisconsin.
All right.
So,
yes.
Yeah.
I did not know that was
it's a thing up there for sure. So that's one spirit. Again, I never thought we were going to make. Then the potato vodka, and then the 4 whiskeys as well. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously we've got the rye that we've got here. You've got your high proof rye as well, right?
Yeah.
That we sell at our 2 tasting rooms.
Okay.
Yes.
So that one's only available if you come out to...
So right now, yeah, we're working on talking about possibly putting it online. So in those states that we're able to ship to, people can order it and we can go out to them that way.
Yeah.
Or if people want to do those barrel picks again, they can always do a barrel pick with us and we can get it to them at that higher proof that way as well. So if their local liquor store wants it, or restaurant, bar, hotel, cruise ship, it doesn't matter where you're at. If you have it, a need or a want to get a barrel pick, you can always reach out to us. And Ryan, myself, or one of the sales team are happy to come to you and talk about whiskey or send out samples, and we'll either do it virtually or in person to make it the best experience we can.
That's awesome. I know a couple of whiskey groups that do barrel picks to raise money for charity. So, you know, they sell it out to their members. They keep what basically pays for the barrel. Rest of it ends up raising money for charity around, you know, different ones around the state.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to follow Brian's comments on with, is we do a lot of work with different military nonprofits and do barrel picks with them specifically. And then they put their own thumbprint on it, per se. They're like, hey, we like that barrel at this proof. Then they sell it to their audience and their supporters of their organization. And then they get a big cut of those sales when it's all said and done as well. So we've done that probably, I don't know, 12 different times or so with different organizations that are out there. Brian's organization that he works with, Base Camp 40 being one of them. So
That's awesome.
Just a fun way. It's a win-win-win for everybody.
Right.
We get to support the organization. We get our spirits in front of maybe a new audience that has very like-minded to us in regards to how they support the military. Helps out the organization with a decent chunk of change, hopefully. So it's fun for everybody.
And I was going to say, at the end of the day, all of them get to sip on some delicious whiskey as well.
Exactly, so right?
You've got all the support in the world, but it all comes back down to what's going in the glass as well. Like, it's hard to not love stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I absolutely do. I love it a lot.
Off camera here, but we can all see the Veterans Whiskey Club flag that we have flying. It's a great organization. Obviously, the name speaks for itself. We were their first ever barrel pick that they did, and that was 3 or 4 years ago now. So that's a fun kind of, again, feather in the cap to be their first barrel pick. But, we've done maybe 12, 15 of them or so now at this point. So.
Oh, yeah, constantly expanding, trying to do it in the best way possible. So
Yeah. That's cool. And then, obviously, we've got the bourbon as well.
Yeah.
And then, what's your fourth?
Well, our American Single Malt.
Oh, okay. I actually have not seen that one. So.
Yeah, well, you'll see it when we walk back to the tasting
room. Yes, I will.
It was, if you know who Fred Minnick is in the Ascot Awards, we just entered that in his competition, and that just won a double platinum. We can talk about it now, I think, right?
Yeah.
Of course we can. Just last week it was announced, so that was, we're pretty proud to see that come through.
Yeah.
It also won Best in Show, which is the best overall whiskey out of about 100 whiskeys that were entered in the Key West Spirit Awards. Some people, the single malt is, people are taking note of it, which is fun for us.
Well, an American single malt is a, like, explosive category right now. It really seems to be.
Zach, I'm so happy to hear you say that. And I'll tell you why. This is like 5 years ago, I don't know, 6 years ago. Sean Hogan, our head distiller, he and I were chatting. I'm like, dude, I'm watching the single malt category, man. It's starting to pick up some speed. I'm like, let's start lying down some single malt.
Yeah.
Like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, 100%, dude. He's like, man, if you say so, I'll start doing it. Okay.
Yep.
And so we started lying down a couple barrels, and this, 5 or 6 years ago, and now you're seeing a lot more American single malts out there.
Yep.
Sean and Jeremy is our second distiller. Sean and Jeremy have done an amazing job with our single malt, and now people are starting to take note, which is fun for us.
Yeah.
So thought we had something there.
Yeah.
Now we're starting to distribute it, and I think we might have something there. So.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I mean, it's absolutely a hugely growing category.
Yeah.
It's kind of jumped in, which, I mean, it makes sense, right? Single malts, you think single malt, you think scotch.
Right.
Scotch has been around for ever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the original Scotch Irish. You can argue one or the other. But the fact that it never really took off in the States, it's, you know, I get bourbon, corn, obviously, that ties together easily, right? Like, that's why that became the U.S. spirit. But single malt definitely has a lot of potential, and there's a lot of ways to do it that's not just that same scotch flavor profile. So
yeah, exactly. A lot of people hear single malt and they immediately think a smoky, peated whiskey of some sort.
Every time.
And not all scotches are smoky, peaty, and that's surprising for a lot of people. But majority, I would say, of American single malts, I by no means have had them all. But and there are a couple of them that are peated and smoky.
Yep.
But I think the majority of them are probably not.
Oh, yeah, most of them, from what I've seen and talked to different distilleries and yourself, Ryan, I would say 80% right now are non-peated in the U.S.
I was thinking 80% exactly too.
And that rough 80% is still phenomenal. And then you got that 20% that's semi-peated. Mm-hmm. Some of them are really peated, but their parts per million isn't that high at all to get that peat flavor, so, or that context that you're going to get that smoky medium to it. They're doing a phenomenal job from Westland all the way to Stranahan's to Georgia, where Detling, I think, is now going to be releasing something. They're a small company as well.
Yeah, I didn't realize that there was more growing out that you knew of as well. I know, like, just in Colorado, obviously, because that's where I'm going to be going. Like, Deerhammer's got their single malt, which is a really good one. I think 291 just dropped a single malt as well not too long ago, and that was...
It's cool, right? I think I love it. It's a new category in whiskeys. It's now recognized federally on the Tax and Trade Bureau. It's a recognized category whiskey.
Awesome.
Which was more challenging than, you know, it should have been.
But well, it's the TTB.
As it goes.
Yep, I've heard so many stories about, working at that liquor store that I was at, right? So barrel picks, obviously, as we talked about before, you see a lot of times they'll just throw a sticker on it now, which is totally fine. Right. But when we were making barrel picks, they would do a label with our logo printed on the label itself.
Yeah, right.
But then that always ended up being a hang-up because that label's got to be resubmitted to the TTB, and then you got to wait for that approval. So I'm not surprised that took a while.
They've really streamlined that approval process, COLA, Certificate of Label Approval.
Oh, that's good.
And as challenging as the hoops that you have to jump through are, every time I talk to the TTB, they couldn't be nicer.
Oh, I've heard they're great to talk with.
Yeah, they're
just
great.
Getting anything approved, I remember it took a while. Never had anybody complain about the interaction. Everybody complained about the time.
Just the process, And they've streamlined that process.
That's good to hear.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
That's awesome.
For labels, I think now it's basically it's 7 days or less to get a new label approved.
Seriously.
Which it used to be 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. I remember we sat on a barrel pick for probably about 3 months,
right.
And we're like, "Hey, we've said we're getting this barrel in. What's going on? Like, just waiting on TTB to approve the label."
Yeah, exactly. So and the same for beer and wine as well. But I think they're somewhere in there as well. Less than a week, so
that's
great.
So cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun and a lot of fun to do these private label barrel picks.
Yeah.
The single malt, it's a thing. It's not going anywhere now.
No, that one's definitely ingrained.
Yeah.
It was fun when I started this almost 9 years ago. I did a review of Deer Hammer's, called Downtime at the time, with their old bottle label that they've, totally abandoned with their new product, everything. But it was reached out to, and that review ended up getting published in a book called The New American Single Malt.
Sweet.
And that was about eight-ish years ago. Yeah.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that was kind of a cool... But that's when I started paying attention, like you said, like you start noticing like this might actually really be a huge growth category.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it has.
Exactly, yeah. And I love the fact that you mentioned Deer Hammer, they're good friends of ours, and Lenny's doing things right, man. He's awesome. We love their shop and what they have going on, man.
We just picked up his bottle that they did with Carboy Winery, their Vino Verso of the Progeny series.
Yeah, okay.
Man, yeah.
It's good,
Lenny's
check
crushing
it
up.
Yeah,
there,
it's great, man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
For sure.
But let's, your guys is obviously doing a great job as well. I'm really stoked to try your single malt. I'm going to have to give that a shot probably before I leave today.
I can exit stage left and go get you a bottle real quick.
We can touch base on it after.
All right. Brian,
if you want to slink off.
Brian's closer.
Cool,
Brian's closer. He's on it. Might as well taste a little bit right now, for sure.
So, man, I mean, we've talked about barrels. We've talked about aging up here at altitude. We've talked how many you guys have. I'm going to cut in a picture in this video for everybody who's watching of your still. Talk a little bit about this over when I cut this in.
This steampunk looking piece of equipment.
Oh, it's so pretty.
Right.
It is so pretty.
Yeah,
I love
it's
this
cool,
thing.
Man. It's obviously the center point of our distillery. It's a 500-gallon combination pot column still from Vendome.
Okay.
Vendome has been making stills since the early 1900s. They make a lot of stills for a bunch of the big guys that are out there that have been doing it for a lot longer than we have, and then us smaller craft guys are lucky enough to get our hands on them every now and again.
Nice.
We kind of backed into this one years ago, which was probably a good turning point with our distillery, but we've been using this thing for a long time now, and it's what everyone first notices when they walk into the distillery.
Oh yeah, caught my eye right away.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, what do you have here, Brian? What is this?
I don't know.
Can you grab a bottle?
I can do that.
Yeah. Wow, it's like an angel came down from heaven and dropped some whiskey in our hands.
Man, that smells so good, too.
It's a nice angel right there.
Yes, it is.
Probably the first time Brian's ever been called an angel, I'd imagine.
I don't know him well enough.
We'll have to ask him.
Yeah, but this, like you said, focal point of the distillery.
100% copper. It's a workhorse. We have a 500-gallon batch system. Our whole distillation line is. We have six fermentation tanks that are all 500 gallons.
Okay.
A 500-gallon pot as well that we cook in. And so it's a 500-gallon batch system. And yeah, the centerpiece of the distillery and the workhorse is the still. It is. Every still has to have a name. Ours has a pretty cool name. Brian, we said you were an angel sitting down from the heavens. And I think, and I followed up closely by saying, I think that's the first time you've ever been called an angel. But thank you, sir.
No, that's 100%.
It's the first time for everything, sir.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you very
absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Cheers.
We got that bottle front and center here. Well, front and slightly off center, so it's not.
Yep.
It's not
my face.
Directly in front of you. Yep.
Well, I mean, it would have been fine.
So, I hate to lead the witness when people are tasting, but if you want to throw out taste notes, or if you just say, "Hey, it's freaking great."
I mean, I do very much enjoy it. It's a lot like greener, earthy than I was kind of thinking.
Yeah, exactly, right, isn't it?
Not like the peated earthiness, like that dark and damp, but like a bright kind of green, earthy flavor.
Normally when I'm doing this and I taste it or smell it, I say it's, have you ever been to a barn before? You go into a hay barn, that's what I smell, is that hay barn mixed with like used leather, not in a bad way or anything.
You got the
like
leather shop on the side of the barn.
Yeah. Exactly,
you're walking in, you need to, let's get a little bit, I think that's an exact description of
it. Yeah, that's great for the nose for sure.
Yeah. A unique whiskey flavor, which I think is maybe why it's standing out in some of these competitions that we're entering, which we'll take. But it's 100% malted barley is what we're doing with it. So
awesome.
The recipe, the mash bill, is relatively simple.
Yeah, right.
Basically one ingredient. Of course, there's yeast and water, et cetera, in it. But
all that, yeah.
Enzymes.
Enzymes.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's that. Back to the still.
Awesome. Yeah.
So, the still is called the War Angel.
War Angel. All right. I love it.
Right? It's a great name to start with.
Yep.
And it's called the War Angel because over 10 years ago now, early on, before we were fully licensed, we did a Kickstarter campaign. And on Kickstarter, there are a couple other crowdfunding websites where you can sell alcohol. Mm-hmm. Now, at the time, Kickstarter was the main player. And so, we did a Kickstarter campaign. And we just sold merch. We just sold glassware and t-shirts and hats and flasks, right?
Awesome.
To help raise a chunk of change. In the end, we raised a small amount, but more important, we got a lot of press from it. But there were a couple soldiers up at Drum that supported us, and we just thought it was the best thing in the world, the coolest thing, that some guys up at Drum were buying some hats and some t-shirts.
Yeah.
And so we sent them what they bought on our Kickstarter, and then times about 10, you know, we sent them a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
Because we were stoked, and so they were stoked that they got a bunch of more extra stuff, and so they sent us down some t-shirts that had their platoon name and their logo on it called the War Angel, and it's this cute little angel that has her fist up,
I think
it's a female, with a little halo over the top.
Nice.
And so we're like, well, that's cool as hell, and so I just hung it up back here, and I was doing a new employee orientation. You haven't heard this story, have you?
Yes, I have.
Have you? Okay, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was doing a new employee orientation back here. And I was still looking for the right name for the still. And she just looks at the t-shirt, she looks at the still, she's like, the War Angel. That's cool. I'm like, well, son of a biscuit, that is cool, isn't it? And so I called up the guys back at Drum, like, hey, you guys, do you mind if we name the our still after your platoon? And they're like, do we mind? We'd fucking be honored.
Right, yeah.
So
they were stoked on that, yep.
So that's hence the namesake, the War Angel, named in honor to 10th Mountain Platoon, so.
Man, that
pretty
is...
Pretty cool deal.
Yeah, that is really awesome.
Pretty cool deal. So.
Yeah, you just didn't say what's above or below the War Angel sign that you have, that you had in here, which concerns me.
So what Brian is referring to, there was a 10th Mountain soldier that came back from deployment that was using IED, copper cone that's about 1 inch thick, that the enemies would use as a weapon.
Okay.
And so when our soldiers come across them, they take them as keepsakes and to keep them out of the enemy's hands.
Yep.
And so when Brian first started, we were walking around, he's like, why do you have that?
Yep.
And this soldier called us up. He's like, hey, I'm using this IED as a candy dish for my kids. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
I want to give it to someone somewhere cool. And like, you guys want it? I'm like, hell yeah, we'll take it.
Yeah.
And so we cut a slit in the top of it, and we had a plaque with the War Angel logo on top and slid it. And we wanted to put it in front of the still, and we did for a while, but it was getting in the way of our distillers working. And so now it is in storage. I'd like to find another use for it somewhere. We need to put our mind to that, Bri, because it is just a fun story, and the fact that we have an enemy weapon back here. Certainly made Brian pause. Brian's a Marine, and it would probably make a lot of people pause and just appreciate the story that now we're using it as part of our sign for our still.
Well, and especially as you've got more veterans, like you said, coming in, I'm sure they'll see that, and that's certainly at the very least, that's one heck of a conversation.
So right, exactly.
It's an eye changer for sure. Yeah.
You probably hadn't seen one since you were deployed, right?
I've seen them, but didn't really want to see them again.
It's
something unique. It's something interesting. I love the fact that we got it and was able to do it. I don't think it's appropriate for inside a place that's supposed to be bomb proof.
Fair.
Yeah. There's some dichotomy. Again, I'm not that smart. That's a big word. But there, it certainly makes people pause. But when you tell people, like, before it was, here was a candy dish for little kids.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Interesting, yeah.
But again, it's not an actual ID. It's just a piece of metal that's shaped like a cone.
Yeah.
That's about it. It was part of something that was an explosive device.
Yep.
So we don't want to emphasize that we have anything to do with explosive or anything like that. It's just a piece of an item that was taken back by someone and given to us as a gift.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Thanks for clarifying.
There was no clarification, so.
Hence the name, the War Angel. I think every student has to have a name in my mind, and so.
Yeah, well, I'll throw the image up here again in case anybody wants to look at it while they're watching this, because, I mean, as you've been talking, I can't take my eyes off the thing.
She's a beaut.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely is. So, a lot of fun there. So, it's a lot of people come back, do a distillery tour here or anywhere else. They've enjoyed whiskey, they like whiskey, they've been drinking whiskey for 20 years or whatever it is.
Yep.
Finally, they have a chance to visit a distillery and do a tour. And they're like, I had no idea what went into a glass of whiskey.
Oh, it's so right? much, right?
I had no idea what happens. And they, when people do a distillery tour and they sit down for a glass of whiskey, they have such greater appreciation for what they're drinking at that point.
I wonder, have you ever had anybody come back, have them try a little bit, then do the tour, then come back and try it again?
Yeah, totally, right? Tastes different, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
It tastes different, doesn't it? Yeah, 100%. That's great, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
My mom didn't drink, my dad did, but my mom did. My dad was our biggest fan. My mom didn't drink, and on the way out above the door that leads up to the tasting room, there's a sign up there. She stopped right there and looked back. She's like, Ryan, all of this for a drink of whiskey?
Yep.
I was like, you're damn right, Mom. And so that quote is hanging above that door there. I'll show it to you.
That's fun. Yeah, I'll check that out. Yeah. We'll get a picture
so
of
people,
that.
So people appreciate that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. You have a much greater respect for everything that goes into a bottle, into a glass, once you get educated on everything behind the scenes at a distillery.
Well, I mean, like, a couple of things that I've learned just in doing a lot of these things is, you know, number one ingredient, a lot of people, we're all aware of it, but nobody really considers it, is the time. Like,
that's, totally right.
I mean, yeah. Huge piece right. of it. And just being able to see, like, the racks and mm-hmm. see everything sitting back here, I think that alone really kind of alters how you taste it if you come back and see that.
I love that point that someone sits down, has a sip, goes and does a tour, comes back, has another sip out of that same glass, and it tastes completely different, right?
It does, yeah.
I love that.
It really changes it.
Yeah, exactly, right? And the manufacturing aspect is part of it. Most people don't realize how hard it is to get a bottle on the shelf on a liquor store or a bar or restaurant. And so maybe that's more consumer facing, but still the logistics that go into having one of our bottles in Maine.
Yeah.
And I was in New York City last week, in New York City on a bar. It's a complete surprise to me. I walked into a random blues bar.
Crazy you chose Maine. I've spent so many summers out there.
I just chose the farthest northeast place away from here. So that way I brought it in.
Tied that in very well.
And we have product in Southern California too, and just the amount of logistics. Hell, that's Brian's whole job is focusing on that these days. People just think we sit around and do podcasts and drink whiskey. But
well, that's my job. That's what I do. Right?
There's so much more that goes into it and so much more time and effort. Now, this is maybe 2% of the overall business. So, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. This is the enjoyable part. Hell, we can sit here all day and do this. So.
Oh, yeah. Easily. Yeah.
I wish this I could. Definitely...
Yeah, right. Yeah, we got to go work.
Yeah, if I didn't have a full-time job, I would. This is definitely what I would. Maybe one day I'll get there to where this is what I just do. Go talk to all the folks. Because conversations like this, too. I mean, this is something that I've found... We went on a road trip, my family and I, and drove through Kentucky on the way back, pulled off and decided to do like the Buffalo Trace tour.
Great.
Which, I mean, of course, you gotta do it, right? If you're a fan of whiskey, you gotta check out something like that. First thing I noticed is opening up the door, because we got air conditioning on, it's middle of summer, it's hot and humid, but as soon as that door opens, you're just hit in the face with that smell of all the bourbon that's sitting there.
Right.
And that was amazing. But the next thing I noticed is, like, everybody's really friendly. There's always good conversations. It's always great. In Colorado, somehow, I feel like we've amplified that to even another level because I've never walked into a distillery and not immediately felt welcome and even at home. It's amazing.
It's one of the best things about the industry, industry-wide, countrywide, and probably worldwide.
Yeah.
Is just everyone is very hospitable.
Yeah.
It's very that's the whole point of the industry is socializing, camaraderie.
Yep.
Good conversation, enjoying a glass of whiskey, talking about it. Might loosen up, you know, the mind and the thoughts a little bit and let the conversation flow. But I think it's one thing that's attracted me to the industry is just how friendly everybody is that you come across. Rarely do you come across somebody that is an old curmudgeon of some sort.
Yeah.
Rarely. So everyone is incredibly friendly and supportive of each other. You know, there's a lot of craft distilleries like you alluded to earlier, not only here in Colorado, but nationwide, and everyone, the majority of people are just so supportive of one another and friendly, and everyone's learning together, growing together, helping each other out.
Well,
so.
Yeah, just to kind of touch on that too, because talking to the ones that I've got to talk to, again, I've talked to a lot, and I'm hoping to have more come on and talk like this, but I mean, exactly like you said, obviously, two distilleries sitting right next to each other, you're clearly competing for business, but there's never a time where I've ever seen them act like competitors. It's if we can improve our product, you can improve your product, and everything ends up being better. It's such a great community. Like,
yeah.
Everything about it's
yeah, it really is
fantastic.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a product, again, there's obviously we hang our hat on our support with different military nonprofits.
Yep.
A lot of other distilleries will support other nonprofits close to their heart. So it's a great product that a lot of people have fun with, and in the end, there's it comes a lot of support. Hell, we paid a lot of taxes too.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about being above table, and so it helps keep the country going too. So,
yep. a lot of tax to go to the liquor industry.
Yes.
I'm sure. Man, that's absolutely awesome. So, sweet. Well, like I said, I know you guys are. Obviously, people can find you up here in Gypsum. We're at the actual distillery here. You've got a tasting bar in Vail.
Yep, we have a tasting room here at the distillery, but then also one off-site in Vail Village, just at the basis of Vail Ski Mountain and the pedestrian village.
Beautiful. And that's, I mean, basically spend all day skiing, get down to the bottom of the mountain, pop your skis off, walk over to the
Exactly, right?
Yep.
Exactly. Summertime, if you're mountain biking or hiking or rafting or fly fishing, go do your activities and come hang with us in the afternoon or evening. So.
Well, it's summertime in Vail, man. So we did just a quick little tangent. My wife and I got to check out the Wine and Jazz Fest in Keystone last year.
Cool.
And so, like, anything in the mountains in the summer, like, everybody can sit. When you hear Vail, the first thing that pops to your mind is skiing, snowboarding, going up in the winter. When you hear Copper Mountain, when you hear Keystone, all of those things, that's the first thing, at least for me, for my whole life, that's what came to mind, right? Like, you go up there for the winter, you go to ski. Come out here in the summer. My gosh, is it gorgeous.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Even, you know, into spring right now, we're towards the end of May and just driving through here. My wife and I are like, we're tempted to pull over on I-70 to just look at some of the cool stuff.
Yeah, exactly, right?
You don't see all the time.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful out here.
It is. It really is. Again, really fortunate for us to be able to call this home. It comes at a cost, a little harder to get some raw materials up here on occasion.
Yeah.
When that blizzard's rolling through or a storm socked in for 4 or 5 days. Might delay things coming or going, so we just deal with that and manage it because it's certainly worth it for us to live where we want to live and are able to do what we love to do as well. So and again, going back to the military, we certainly want to be able to be here without those guys and gals out there putting it all on the line. You mentioned we're recording this over Memorial Day weekend. It's a holiday for a lot of people out there. A lot of people don't understand or appreciate the holiday and what's going on. Certainly we do here. We want to give a shout out to all the fallen soldiers and the Gold Star families that are out there. Certainly Brian has some friends and some battle buddies out there that he's lost. And so there's a Memorial Day ceremony that we always go to at Ski Cooper, the 10th Mountain Ceremony.
Okay.
Try to catch a couple of them each Memorial Day. So want to make sure we keep that in our hearts. And I know this is going to be released after the fact, but certainly want to show some appreciation to all the soldiers out there, past, present, and future. So.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. And I mean, definitely to touch that point. Memorial Day, when I was growing up, obviously, as a kid, you don't understand, right?
But, right.
And so it's always marked sort of that unofficial start of summer for me is Memorial Day weekend. But as you grow up and you start to really appreciate what exactly it is, and you know, you talk to people who have lost folks overseas and all of that. So definitely take a moment. Obviously, enjoy your weekend. If you end up getting a three-day weekend, please certainly enjoy your day off, but take a moment to reflect on why you get to enjoy that day off, because it also adds to a deeper appreciation.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, like Start that day appreciating your day off. Think about it for a minute. The rest of the day, you'll appreciate it even a little bit more.
Yeah.
Same things. Come in here, have a drink, then see this, go back, and you'll appreciate that drink even a little
bit more. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Exactly. So we have a saying on our a toast on a rye bottle.
All right.
So from mountains to shining shore, by freedom they always swore. Though death did not cheat him, they bestowed us a freedom and a whiskey worth fighting for. Cheers to all the soldiers out there. Appreciate you guys.
Cheers to everyone. Awesome, guys. Well, thank you so much for recording this with me. This has been a blast of a conversation. We're going to have to do another one as well.
Anytime.
Yeah, come back up here for sure. I'm happy to sit here and talk.
Yeah, totally right. Totally. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, we'll talk more everything. I mean, I've learned a few things I didn't know before, which is always the goal. Hopefully everybody listening has done the same. We've talked a little bit about where to find you. Obviously, check you guys out. Tell people where to find you online.
I thought we were done. We're not even done yet.
No, you gotta let people know where to find you, man.
Our website is 10thwhiskey.com. That's 10th, whiskey with an E. You can find us across all socials, even doing dances on TikTok. You should watch our distillers dance. It's hilarious. Actually, we don't have any videos released to that. Yep. But our socials are 10th MTN Whiskey across all socials. And we are on TikTok. We're just not dancers.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Awesome. So go give them a follow. Check them out. Of course, if you're liking the show, if you're enjoying the show, give us a follow. Mile High Bourbon, search it. Same thing, all socials. I don't have a TikTok. I can't. My brain doesn't wrap around it well enough. I can't seem to do it. I'm going to enlist my kid.
Right.
Teenage kid. Right. Maybe they can help me get it done. But follow us, Mile High Bourbon. Check us out, milehighbourbon.com. If you want to support the show, check out Centennial Cuts. Again, thank you so much to them for supporting. Or head to milehighbourbon.com/shop. We've got glassware on there right now. We've got smoked salts that I make as well.
Sweet.
They use it at the pizza company. Got to give them a shout out as well. My family's pizza company, Kickin' Ass Mountain Pizza. So if you head into Fairplay, check out Switching Lady Distillery. Right behind that, when they get to open back up, still closed for now, hoping for this summer to do a grand reopening. But get yourself some delicious pizza, handmade right there to order. In my certainly biased opinion, best pizza in the state.
I love it.
Absolutely.
As fantastic. It should be.
Yeah,
right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, but they are. They're so good. They do special pizzas each week. They do wings. They've got a Thai basil sauce that they'll do on the wings. It's just absurd.
Like, now we're talking.
You'll eat that all day.
Nice.
But check them out. And then one shout out to real quick to Crazy Mountain Brewing. They have offered me up that space to record all the time. I go down there. That's where podcast guests usually join me at, right in the heart of Denver off Ogden and Colfax. Obviously not recording there today because we're up here sitting in front of these beautiful barrels, but shout out to them for giving me that space as well. So, guys, thank you again so much.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Zach. This.
This has been an awesome show. And then, actually, one more shout out I got to give to Roma Ransom, fantastic band. Find them online, search them on Instagram, figure out where they're playing next. They record the intro, outro music for all my episodes.
That's fantastic.
Yep, yeah, Colorado based band. They tour around here. Find them at distilleries pretty typically. That's how I discovered them. Was at Talnua over St. Patrick's Day.
Nice.
So, yeah, check them out. Huge shout out to them. And we'll see everybody on the next episode. Again, guys, thank you
so much. Thank you.
It's been fantastic.
Appreciate it, Zach.
Appreciate you joining me. And,
see you on the next one.
Exactly.
Cool.
Awesome.
Cheers.
Cheers.